It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download, the podcast that features old-time radio that is on the Radio Theater Channel, on your internet radio, and your computer, and everything else. I'll give you that a web address, www.oldtimeradiolisten.com. But we're here now to listen to the podcast. That's what we're going to do. And we're going to start off with an episode of the Mutual Radio Theater. This is from 1980, and it's called The Contractor.
This is Vincent Price. One contracts for a house to be built, for grain to be shipped, for an airplane to be constructed, and so on. And one can also contract to take another person's life. Listen to this.
Yeah, I can hire somebody to bump off Kirkwood, but it'll cost you some dough.
How much?
Oh, like $5,000 or $10,000.
Which is it, Bayard? $5 or $10?
You make it sound like a dime store.
How much is it gonna cost?
Look, Mr. Ashland, I won't know for sure until I contact the hitman.
You know one?
Sure. His name's Cannon.
Cannon?
Good name for a trigger man, eh?
Cannon.
Milford Cannon. You sure you want me to contact him?
I want Kirkwood dead.
Enough to pay for it?
Enough. Has this Cannon done jobs for you before?
No.
How do you know he's any good?
He's good.
He won't go to the law.
He won't even know who's hiring him.
It's important my name be kept out of it.
You'll never be mentioned.
Well, how do I pay him?
Half when he's hired, half when Kirkwood is eliminated.
Well, go ahead, Bayard. Let me know how much Cannon wants for a job, $5 or $10. I'll sign a contract.
And that's just the beginning of our story.
Mutual Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week. Brought to you in Elliot Lewis's production of the Mutual Radio Theater. Our story, The Contractor, by Ted Sherdeman. Our stars, Shepard Menken and Sidney Swire.
Milford Cannon lived in a small apartment in a neighborhood that was aggressively middle class. He was an avid gun collector and coincidentally made his living as a contractor. He let it be known to the various town mobs that he was a hitman available for hire. He didn't think of the 5 men he'd killed already. Oh, he thought of the first, but less of the second, and not at all of the third through the fifth. When you get used to something, you don't think of it much. And Cannon was used to doing what he did. So when the phone rang, he wasn't surprised by what he heard.
Hello.
Cannon?
Who wants to know?
This is Hartley Bayard. Is that you, Cannon?
Just a minute, I'll get him for you. You the guy that works for Ashland?
I got a job for you. You want it or not?
How's the pay?
$3,500.
Ah. That was last year. Prices are up on everything.
Like how much?
Well, kind of depends on what you want me to do.
It's a contract.
Huh? On who?
First, what's your price?
Oh, $4,000, maybe $5,000.
Well, which is it, $4 or $5?
$4?
$2 down, $2 when the job's done.
Okay. Who?
Guy named Kirkwood.
Kirkwood. Never heard of him.
Don't matter. Is it a deal?
Yeah, okay. Where do I find him?
Kirkwood spends a good deal of time at the athletic club.
Kirkwood, athletic club. When do I get the first payment?
Tomorrow morning. Where shall we meet?
The refreshment stand at Smyrna Park.
Smyrna Park?
Yeah.
I'll have the money for you then.
He's all set, Mr. Ashland.
How much does Cannon want to do the job, Baird?
$10,000. $5 down, $5 when the job's done.
Kirkwood. Getting rid of him is worth it.
I'm to deliver the five to Cannon tomorrow morning.
And when am I going to be rid of Kirkwood?
By tomorrow night or the next day, Mr. Ashland.
Sooner the better.
The, five G's, Mr. Ashland.
Oh, yeah. Here. Hey, you don't have to count it, Baird. It's all there.
Well, this must be the refreshment stand he mentioned. It's the only stand in Smyrna Park. And it's not open. Fine thing. Hitman doesn't show up. Of course, he didn't mention any special time. Just morning is all. Well, it's 10 o'clock now, and I haven't seen a soul. I wish the stand was open. I could use a cup of coffee. Hey, wait a minute. Is that him? Is your name Cannon?
Who wants to know?
Hartley Bayard.
Cannon.
I brought the money.
Show me.
$2,000, you said. It's all there.
I don't count too fast.
Finished now?
Yeah, this is only a down payment, you know.
I know. Two now, two when the job's done.
This Kirkwood guy, he's in the DA's office.
That's right.
And if the newspapers are right, he might put your boss away for a long time.
Your only interest is getting rid of Kirkwood.
Well, if I'd have known for sure you worked for Ashland, my fee would have been double.
You agreed to take a contract on Kirkwood for $4,000.
Look, I don't go back on my word, Bayard.
Okay. As I told you, you can find Kirkwood at the athletic club. He likes to play squash.
That's no place to waste a guy. On a squash court?
I don't care where you do it. I only told you where you can see the target.
Okay.
When?
When what?
When are you gonna do it?
Oh, maybe today, maybe tomorrow. I don't know.
I gotta tell my boss when.
It'll be in a day or two.
I told my boss you'd deliver soon.
Well, just have the other $2,000 waiting for me, okay? Right here. As for your boss, he can read about it in the paper when it happens.
So I can read about it in the papers when it happens.
Cannon said he'd do it in a day or two.
By that time, the whole world will know I'm guilty.
I tried to pin him down, Mr. Ashland.
You tried. You struck out.
He said maybe it'd be today or tomorrow.
Well, it better be. I want Kirkwood out of the picture now. If you don't know a good hit man, I'll find somebody who does.
Look, Mr. Ashland, these things take time.
Yeah, meanwhile, Kirkwood is painting me into a corner I can't get out of. Nobody can get me out of it.
The judge will declare it a mistrial when Kirkwood fails to show up.
If Kirkwood fails to show up.
Cannon don't miss, Mr. Ashland. Not on his contracts.
$2,000. Well, it's time you got to the supermarket, Milford. It's time to stock up on everything, including ammo. I better decide first what I'm going to use. He said the athletic club. Kirkwood likes to play squash. Maybe I should stop there first and see what the target looks like. And I can stop at the supermarket on the way back. Yeah, that's what I'll do.
Is that Mr. Kirkwood there?
No, he won't get here until after quarter's out.
When's that?
About 3 or 4.
You okay if I watch till he shows up?
Oh, sure. Hey, nice play there.
Hey, you really chewed him up today.
Why not? He's a gangster. We got the dope on him.
Shut up. Dope on him.
Okay, it's your serve.
That's Mr. Kirkwood there.
Yeah, which one?
Don't you know him?
No, not by sight, no.
Oh, there, the white-haired man.
That old codger?
He may have white hair, but he's spry as a 20-year-old. Hey, good shot.
The other one, who's he?
A pigeon Kirkwood challenged from the looks of it.
Hey, he's good.
Kirkwood, one of the best.
Loser, Beislin.
Well, I've seen all I need to see.
Oh, you going?
Oh, yeah. I gotta get to the supermarket. Oh.
Mil- Milford Cannon, hitman, has seen his target, a white-haired man named Kirkwood, who is a demon at playing squash. But now, with $2,000 in his pocket, Cannon is en route to the neighborhood supermarket to stock up. On the way, he reviews what gun he will select to fulfill his contract. He settles on a .357 Magnum he's been wanting to use ever since he bought it. He wonders whether he should make his victim squirm a little before delivering the lethal shot or just finish him off clean and easy. He decides the best course is the latter. A guy like Kirkwood won't squirm much, so it's better to finish him off clean and easy. There's less chance of being caught that way, too. He puts the contract out of his mind as he fills the shopping cart in the supermarket. He buys more than he intended because he finds himself following a lady with beautiful legs. She's a bit fat in the hips, but she has legs that won't quit and a face that's really beautiful. Cannon follows her all the way to the check stand and then finds another shopper has squeezed in behind her. So he has to take a different check stand.
That'll be $44.33.
I can remember when the bill was about 20 bucks.
So can I. Well, here's your change. $5.67.
Thanks.
You lose something, sir?
No. Just looking around. You know that lady?
Which lady?
At the next check stand.
No.
Well, night.
Night, sir.
Oh, now
look what you made me do.
I'm sorry. Oh.
The milk, it's going all over the place.
Oh.
Why don't you watch where you're going?
I'll help you.
You've already done enough.
Oh.
Bumping into me like that, making me drop a sack.
Look, please let me help you, will you?
The milk, it's running into everything.
Well, you know the old saying.
What old saying?
No use crying over spilled milk.
Very funny. It's not your milk.
Look, I'm... Oh. This is very hard for me, but let me make this up to you, huh?
How do you make up for what you've done?
Well... You could have dinner with me.
Dinner with you?
Yeah, I'm a good cook. A chef, almost. Look, I'd be pleased to prepare dinner for you, huh?
Are you trying to pick me up?
Well, no.
I saw you eyeing me at the check stand.
Well, yeah, I was just trying to avoid bumping carts, that's all.
You were eyeing me.
Well... Frankly, I was, yes.
And you bumped into me on purpose?
No. That was an accident. Honest.
Did you mean it?
Mean what?
About inviting me for dinner.
Oh, that, yeah, I did.
At your place?
Well, we can go somewhere else if you'd like.
Let's go to your place.
Oh, I'll fix you a terrific meal.
On one condition.
What's that?
Only dinner.
After you, madam.
This is where you live?
Yep. Welcome to my abode, or flat, or whatever you call it.
I'd call it a junk heap.
What'd you say?
Nothing. I guess you live here alone?
You guessed right. Make yourself at home while I fix dinner.
You know, we don't even know each other's name.
Oh, I'm Milford Cannon.
I'm Roxana Ellesmere.
Uh-huh.
At least that was my married name. Ellesmere.
Oh, you're a widow?
No, I'm a divorcee. Dirty clothes, magazines all over the place. You've been living alone too long, Milford.
Yeah. Just throw them any old place, eh? Roxana. Wow. What a beautiful name.
Thank you. I know. I'll clean up this place while you fix dinner.
Oh, that's not necessary.
Come on, yes, it is. I'll clean while you cook.
Well, that wasn't part of the deal, Roxanna.
It is if I want to sit down.
I'm fixing veal piccata, Roxanna.
That's nice, Milford.
That's veal with lemon slices.
I know. I haven't had it for years.
And potato au gratin and snap beans, okay?
Sounds wonderful.
I have the salad plates in the fridge so they'll get nice and cold.
What kind of salad, Milford?
Oh, just sliced tomatoes on lettuce leaves. But I have a wonderful Japanese dressing made of rice vinegar and sake to pour on.
There. I'm through. It smells delicious what you're doing.
Where did you learn to cook?
From books. Living alone and all, you know. Well, I had to do something.
I suppose so. Well, what do you think, Milford?
About what?
Should I use my married name, Ellesmere? I was married to a real drip.
Oh, yeah? For how long?
Less than a year. It was the pits. What I want to know is, should I use Ellesmere or my own name before I became a bride?
Well, that's up to you, you know. What was your name before?
Kirkwood. Oh, you dropped a plate. Here, let me clean it up.
What did you say?
I said I'd clean it up. Is there a dustpan and a broom in this place?
Yeah. Here. What name did you say?
Kirkwood.
Yeah, I thought that's what you said.
I moved in with my folks right after the divorce. Should I use Ellesmere or Kirkwood? You dropped another plate! It's really delicious, Milford.
Thanks, Roxanna. Oh, what a beautiful name.
Thanks. You're not eating much.
That's the way it is with cooks, you know.
Ha! You've never seen a really thin chef, have you?
Well, some of them are, you know.
You didn't answer me yet.
About what?
About whether I should change my name back to Kirkwood or keep on using Ellesmere.
Well, you know, that depends.
On what?
Well, what does your father do?
Oh, he's a lawyer with the DA's office now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the last honest lawyer you'll ever meet.
Oh, boy. Why should I meet him?
You never know when you'll need a good lawyer and an honest one. These tomatoes with that dressing are really delicious.
Thank you.
Everything is delicious.
Thank you again.
What do you do for a living?
What?
You just don't sit around reading those magazines about guns.
Oh.
Maybe that's the reason.
The reason for what?
Why you have so many. I was busy cleaning up and I put your shirts from the laundry in one of the drawers. I had to open a few drawers and they were filled with guns.
Yeah.
Why so many?
Well, I'm a hunter.
With a handgun?
Well, why not?
You mean you hunt and shoot animals?
Yep.
With handguns?
Well, you know, I carry a handgun to protect myself from, snakes and things like that, you know.
But I counted at least 8 of them, and I saw no rifle.
Oh, my hunting rifle's at the gunsmith's right now. It's getting fixed, see?
That must be the reason.
Reason for what?
You are a classic victim.
Victim? Of what?
Of the ads in all those magazines. You are an advertising writer's dream. You buy whatever the ad is selling.
Oh, well, maybe so. But only if it's guns or ammunition.
Right. That's the reason. Aren't you going to answer your phone?
Oh, it'll stop ringing eventually.
You could stop it from ringing by answering it.
Oh, well. All right. Hello.
Cannon?
Who wants to know?
I know it's you. What are you doing sitting around home?
Who wants to know?
My boss wants to know when you're filling that contract on Kirkwood.
Why is he so anxious?
Come on, Cannon. He's got 2 G's invested, and he'll pay another two when you deliver.
Like I said, he can read about it in the paper. So, I answered the phone, Roxanna.
Yep.
I'd like to meet your father.
You would? Honest?
Honest.
Was that what that phone call was all about? I mean, are you mixed up in a... Do you have a case for my father? Do you need a good lawyer?
No, I don't think so, no.
That heel I was married to, he never once met my father. And here on our first time together, you asked to meet him. That does it.
Does what?
I'm not going to use that creep's lousy name anymore. I'm changing it back to Kirkwood.
Milford Cannon is romantically smitten by the daughter of the man he's contracted to kill. What is he to do? Cannon tries to reason. Roxanna Kirkwood will get over the death of her father in time, or will she? And what of Cannon? Will he ever be able to look at her glorious face again, knowing that he wasted her father? And he's already been paid $2,000 as a down payment for the job. Not only that, but he must purchase a rifle right away to make good on his story of hunting game. But he's never hunted a wild animal in his life. In spite of his gloomy thoughts, Milford Cannon, being a creature of habit, sits in his car across from the athletic club. He sees the white-haired target come out and start to go to his car. Cannon has the .357 Magnum out of its shoulder holster, and he aims the gun at Kirkwood's back.
What the... I never did that before. Hello.
You filled your contract yet, Cannon?
Who's this, Bayard?
Who are you expecting?
Well, a funny thing happened.
I'm listening.
Well, I had a little bad luck.
Like what?
I was sitting in my car across from the athletic club, and the target showed up, as I expected, and, I forgot to load the piece.
You what?
Look, it could happen to anybody, Bayard.
You forgot to... Oh, boy, I've heard everything.
So I forgot. It was a new rod, and that...
Look, Cannon, you got $2,000 already.
I know all about that, and another two, and the job is done. I'll do it. Maybe tonight.
You will if you want that fourth foul. My boss doesn't take kindly to people who welch on him.
Who's welching? It was an accident.
Which you'll meet with if you don't deliver. Goodbye, Cannon.
What's that supposed to mean? Bayard? Bayard! Hey, he couldn't have had time to call back. Hello?
Milford?
Oh, it's Roxanna.
I've got something to tell you. You'll be at the apartment for a while?
Why?
I'll be right over.
Then I'll wait for as long as it takes.
I'm leaving now. This is important.
Roxanna? Roxanna? And to think, if I'd have been talking to that creep Bayard, all my Roxanna would have gotten is a busy signal. I love that name. Roxanna. Oh, is that...
Roxanna.
My one and only.
It's too important to talk about on the phone.
What?
That's why I had to see you.
Well, I'm glad.
Do you know what my father found out?
No.
It was during the trial, this morning. An assistant found out, or investigator or somebody. You ready for this?
For what?
Ashland has put out a contract on my father's life.
Oh, come again?
I said that Ashland is...
I heard you.
And he refuses to worry about it.
Who?
My father.
Oh.
The man who's behind it has already paid $5,000 to some hitman with another five after that, when the job's done.
Come again with those figures.
Five down, and five when my father is dead.
No, it's two down and two more when your father's dead.
No, five and five... How do you know?
Oh, well, I'm just guessing. I was never much good at math, you see.
My father isn't the least bit worried.
Does he know who the guy is?
What guy?
The hitman.
No, the investigator didn't know that, but he knew Ashland had contracted for my father's life.
And how much he'd pay?
5 and 5, not 2 and 2.
Well, how'd he find out?
I don't know. I have a favor to ask of you, Milford.
Oh, anything, Roxanna.
It's not a very big one, because you've got lots of them.
Yeah, but lots of what?
Guns.
Oh.
The favor is, I want you to protect my father.
You want me to?
You've got handguns, and you know how to use them,
well,
don't you?
Yeah, I know how, but...
It's very simple, really. Until this blows over and the police catch the hitman, you protect my father.
Now, how... What? you're not serious, are you?
All you'd have to do is stay on the front porch of the house. Please, Milford. For me?
Hey. You are serious. Oh, my.
Oh, it's hard to believe. What a stupid bunch of... Yeah. Yeah, I'll see you in court tomorrow morning. Yeah, bye. You know what my lawyer just told me.
Well, how would I know?
That lousy Kirkwood. How does he do it?
How does he do what?
My lawyer just told me the DA's office, the police, and Kirkwood know I got a contract out on him.
No.
And what I paid to have Kirkwood wasted.
What? What you paid?
They know everything but the trigger man's name. The $5,000 down payment, the $5,000 when the job is done, everything.
How did they find out?
A good question, Bayard. How did they?
Well, now, Mr. Ashland, you don't think I... Hey, put away that gun.
Who'd you go to first, Bayard? The DA's office or the police?
I went to neither one. I didn't. Why should I?
Yeah. Why should you?
If it had been me, I'd have given them the name of the hitman, too, wouldn't I?
Why didn't you, Bayard?
I had nothing to do with him finding out, honest.
Funny thing, but I believe you.
You know, I've always told you the truth, Mr. Ashland, about everything.
I came down from my room to say goodnight, Milford.
Ah, you look beautiful, Roxanna.
Because I feel secure. You've got a gun?
Yeah, right here in its shoulder holster.
I feel real secure now, with you on the porch here guarding my father inside.
Well, you know, it's not exactly necessary. The joint is crawling with cops.
That's not the point. I know they're inside and outside the house, but your being here on the front porch, well, it comforts me. I know you'll keep him safe.
Yeah, well, what makes you so sure, Roxanna?
Because I know you love me and want me to be happy.
Oh, yeah, I sure do. But what if the gorilla, the trigger man, gets to Kirkwood, to your father, in spite of everything? He might, you know.
I'd still have you to love.
Good night, Roxanna.
Good night, Bill.
Love your name, Roxanna. Even if I went inside and dusted off Kirkwood, it'd be a cinch to get caught with so many cops around. Oh, boy, then I'd fry for sure. And how about that Bayard who paid me only $2,000 instead of the $5,000 he got? That means he's already made $3,000 on cash that he was supposed to pay me. Hey, maybe I'm hitting the wrong guy. Uh-oh. Who's this coming?
Put up the gun. I'm a detective.
Oh, yeah? How do I know?
My name's Kenton. My wallet's in my hip pocket.
Well, don't reach for it or you're dead.
Then how do I prove who and what I am?
Turn around real slow and keep your hands high. Okay. I got the wallet.
Yeah.
Hey, you are a cop, and your name is Kenton.
I said I was.
Well, I had to make sure, didn't I?
Can I put my hands down now?
Yeah. It's all right with me.
You can put your gun away now.
Oh, yeah, sure. Hey, here's your wallet.
Yeah, thanks. That's a fancy shoulder holster.
Hey, thank you.
And a mighty fancy handgun. .357?
.357 Magnum.
What are you doing here?
The same as you, keeping an eye out for Mr. Kirkwood.
At his request?
No. Roxanna's.
Who?
Roxanna. She's his daughter.
Oh, moonlighting, huh?
What?
Extra job, huh?
From what?
From your regular employment. You were a security guard?
Oh, yeah. Well, I am now. Well,
where'd you work?
Hey, what is this, the third degree?
You got a license to carry that gun?
Well, what's that got to do with it?
Answer the question.
Well, sure.
Show me.
Well, I don't carry it on me.
Where is it?
It's home. Home, that's where it is.
Where do you live?
Look, I don't know what you're doing.
Relieving you with that gun. Now we'll go to your home and you'll show me the license you got to carry a concealed weapon, or my gun's apt to go off.
Vincent Price again, and here's the fourth act of The Contractor.
I've been thinking.
About Kirkwood, no doubt.
Yeah, Kirkwood. And that hitman, Cannon, that we hired to erase him. I've been thinking it'd be foolish if anything happened to Kirkwood now.
What?
Well, Kirkwood knows he's a marked man. How much was paid for the job on him? Call it off.
Call it off?
You heard me, Baird.
What if Cannon's already done it?
That's not likely or we'd have heard about it. Call it off.
You're out some dough already.
So I lost 5,000 bucks before. This way I'm saving 5 G's.
Oh, I don't know.
I said call Kirkwood's death off. You get on the phone, contact the hitman, call off the deal. I don't want to risk it now.
But the way Kirkwood's been going, you can get 20 years.
Yeah, but I won't be tried for murder, which is what it'll be if anything happens to Kirkwood.
I'll try.
You do it. Tonight.
My apartment's right at the top of the stairs.
Mm-hmm. After you.
It's locked. I always keep it locked.
Yeah, it's good thinking.
After you, sir?
No, after you.
You don't have to keep pointing that gun at me. I was just trying to be polite.
Now the license.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, the license. Where did I put that thing?
Well, I suggest you start with the desk. This is a desk, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's sort of a desk, yes. More a chest of drawers.
Well?
Oh, well, I'll look for it. Must be here someplace.
I'll be glad to help.
No. I'll find it. It's got to be here someplace.
Wrong drawer, huh?
Yeah. Let me think.
Maybe you haven't got a license.
Oh, I've got it all right. I'm just wondering where I put it. Do you have to keep pointing that gun at me all the time?
Until you produce the license. Only until then. You see, I don't like to take chances.
Can't you take my word for it?
Nope.
Well, let's try this one. Not there.
You close that drawer awfully fast.
Well, there's nothing there, honest.
What have we here? Don't move.
There's nothing in there.
Only a Smith & Wesson. Let's see, this is an outdoorsman, 38. And what is this?
Oh, that's French made. It fires an 8mm shell, when you can get them.
I see, it's hammerless and has a fold-down trigger.
Yeah, you see, I'm sort of a collector.
And so I see.
Yeah, and I do a lot of hunting.
Where are the rifles?
Well, I only have one. It's at the gunsmith's. It's being repaired.
What do you do with all these handguns?
Well, I carry one when I go hunting, with my rifle.
I see. You got a copy of your hunting license?
No. Do they give you one?
As a rule.
Well, what do you think of that?
You want to look some more, or you just want to go down to the station with me? You want to answer that?
Huh? Oh, yeah. If it's all right with you.
Then do so.
Yeah. Hello?
Cannon?
Yeah.
I tried to get you earlier.
Yeah, I was out.
My boss has changed his mind.
Yeah? About what?
You're not to erase Kirkwood. The deal is off. Got that?
You mean it?
I do. The contract is off.
What about the... Okay. Huh. What do they do to guys who carry guns without a license? I mean, who can't find their license?
Well, if there's a record of you having one, nothing. If no license was ever issued, it's a felony.
A felony? That means that...
Yeah, depending on who you are, you could get a minimum of 1 year in a state prison.
Hello?
Right. Roxanna?
Yes, who's this?
Milford.
Oh, where are you?
Well, that's sort of hard to explain.
You're not on the porch guarding my father.
Oh, no, not now.
Well, where are you?
Roxanna, you'll never believe this.
Try me.
I'm at police headquarters.
Where?
Well, you see, I didn't have a license, and the law picked me up. I told you the place was crawling with cops.
Milford, where are you?
At the jailhouse.
What did you do?
I told you already. I didn't have a license to carry a gun.
But I thought... Oh, dear.
Roxanna?
Yes, Milford?
I need a lawyer.
I'll wake up my father. He'll be right down. And I'll come with him. But one thing, Milford.
What?
You must tell my father everything.
Everything?
Everything. He's honest, and he only handles honest clients.
Well, after I got the job, I met your daughter, and, well, I guess I fell in love with her.
Oh, Milford.
Well, anyway, I was standing guard on your front porch when this flat...
Officer, if you don't mind.
Excuse me, sir. This officer came up and asked if I had a license to carry the gun I had.
And he didn't have one, sir, and none had been issued. We even went back to his apartment, and I found 7 or 8 other handguns in a chest of drawers.
Just as I did, Milford.
Well, I told him I used them when I went hunting.
That's what you told me.
I never hunted wild game or anything, Mr. Kirkwood. I don't even own a rifle.
That figures.
Then when Roxanna told me about Mr. Ashland paying $5,000 plus another $5,000 when you cashed in your chips, I only got $2,000, Mr. Kirkwood.
And after Mr. Kirkwood's demise?
Another $2,000. I've got about $1,200 left from the first $2,000.
You were going to shoot my father?
No, I couldn't, Roxanna. Not after I fell in love with you.
That's why you said 2 and 2 when I said 5 and 5.
Yeah. The guy named Bayard stood to make more out of the caper than I did. 6 to my 4. And he was just a messenger boy. Oh, you know, you can't trust anybody anymore.
Well, Mr. Kirkwood, looks like we got your hit, man.
What is, Mr. Ashland?
Well, according to the morning newspaper, your hitman, Milford Cannon, was picked up by the police.
Cannon?
A misdemeanor charge has been filed against him. Guess who's defending him?
Well, how would I know?
Mr. Kirkwood.
Did Cannon talk?
All the paper says is that he was paid $2,000 as a down payment.
Two?
But you took 5 from me. Where's the other 3, Bayard?
Why, he lied. I gave him 5.
Your face gives you away, Bayard. You gave him 2.
Put up that gun, Mr. Ashland. I wouldn't cheat you.
The $3,000, Bayard.
You'll be up for murder if that goes off.
The $3,000?
I... All right. Here's the $3,000. You see? I'm counting it out for you.
As for being up for murder, it depends on whether they ever find your body. Boys, give me a cement overcoat and drop him in the river, will you?
The Mutual Radio Theater is brought to you 5 nights a week at this time. Tonight's original radio play, The Contractor, was written by Ted Sherdeman and produced and directed by Fletcher Markle. Your host was Vincent Price. Our stars were Shepard Menken and Sidney Swire. Featured in the cast were Jack Crucian, Norman Alden, Byron Kane, and Carol Bilger. The music for Radio Theater was composed and conducted by Nelson Riddle. John Harlan speaking. The Elliott Lewis production of Radio Theater is a presentation of CVI.
This is Cicely Tyson. Join us tomorrow when I'll have another story that illustrates one of love's many faces. We'll be right back.
The Contractor, an episode of the Mutual Radio Theater from 1980. We'll wrap up this week's podcast with another episode of the Mole Mystery Theater from 1944. And this is called Nightmare, and it's been rebranded because it was carried on the Armed Forces Radio Network during World War II. But we'll give this a listen. It's usually pretty good stuff from Mole Mystery Theater, Nightmare.
Good evening. This is Peter Lorre. Hey, did you ever have a nightmare? Did you ever go through a horrible experience that seemed very real? Yes, sometimes reality and unreality seem as one, and I'm not so sure anymore. Like the fellow tonight in a mystery playhouse. Tonight we are going to have a nightmare. That is, we are going to hear about somebody else, which is almost as bad. This gentleman had a particularly realistic one. In fact, he didn't know for the life of him whether or not it really happened. But you listen for yourself to the unfolding of William Irish's strange and intriguing story of a man who dreamed he committed murder and woke up to the fact that maybe he actually had. Listen to Nightmare.
Dodge, Homicide Division.
This is Vince.
Oh, hello, kid. What's on your mind?
Cliff, I've got to see you now, as soon as possible.
Look, kid, I'm working. What's so important you can't tell it on the phone?
Cliff, I think I killed a man last night. I don't know whether I dreamed it or it actually happened. That's why I've got to see you.
You killed somebody? I can't believe it. Not you, Vince. Well, listen, meet me in the office in 15 minutes. Whatever you do, don't tell anybody else about this. Go ahead, Vince. Tell me some more about this dream of yours.
Well, after that, Cliff, all I remember is the white face. The face of a woman. Beautiful, but false somehow. You see, we were in a room with nothing but doors. 8 doors, frame to frame, with no wall space between. Well, I opened one of the doors, and suddenly someone rushed at me. We struggled, and he forced me to the floor. As we fought, he said to the woman, "Hand me that knife." Well, I raised my hand to defend myself, and suddenly I felt the handle of something. I realized the woman had put the knife into my hand by mistake. And then I...
Then you stabbed him.
Yeah. And I stabbed him. Well, after that, the woman disappeared, and I felt I had to hide the body. Well, behind one of the 8 doors, there was a closet. I propped the body inside, and I locked the door. Then I went out of the house. It's horrible. I can't get it out of my mind.
But what makes you think any of this actually happened? It's an unpleasant dream, sure, but it's not unusual. Lots of people dream they kill someone.
But when you dream, do you wake up with big scratches on your wrist like this one?
What are you asking me to believe? You got up in your sleep and you killed somebody? A scratch on your wrist proves nothing.
I admit that, but then when I got out of bed this morning, I found this button.
Now, wait a minute. You're not going to tell me that button came off in your hand while you were wrestling with that guy in the dream.
That's the way it happened.
That I refuse to believe. It came off your shirt.
I could never afford pearl buttons. You know that. Not real pearl.
Now, listen to me, Vince. I don't want to hear any more of this. If I weren't your brother-in-law, I'd lock you up and call a psychiatrist.
How do you think all this makes me feel? Cliff, if it wasn't for the key, I could forget the whole thing.
Key? What key? I suppose it's something else from your dream. Now, stop it, Vince. I don't want to hear any more.
That's right. Go ahead. Get sore. But no matter how angry you get, it doesn't destroy the reality of this key. Look at it. You never see a key like this these days. It's fretted, it's full of scrollwork, made of brass, old-fashioned, but nevertheless real. And in the dream, if it was a dream, that's the key I used to lock the body in the closet. What's there left to think? Only this, there's somewhere there's a door that this key belongs to. And behind that door, there's a dead man, and I don't know where. My Lord, I don't know where. Nor who he is, nor how and why it happened.
Now, look, kid. It's just one of those cockeyed dreams that happen to people, that's all. All right, if it'll make you feel any better, you can go in the teletype room and watch the reports, Vince. Every crime committed in this state is reported on those machines. Maybe you can identify yourself with some criminal and get this thing off your chest. I'll join you later. Haven't you given up yet?
Don't be funny, Cliff. There's one here that's possible. A stabbing in a town called Clarksburg.
Clarksburg?
Yeah.
There's no transportation up there. You never did learn how to drive a car. You'd really need supernatural aid to kill somebody up there.
Now, wait a minute, Cliff. Here's some more coming in on that stabbing in Clarksburg. It's a description.
Killer, 5'9", weight 150, brown hair, wearing a yellow and green sweater under a brown suit. Hey, Vince, you wear a yellow and green sweater, don't you?
Don't be coy. You gave me that sweater for Christmas.
Maybe it's only a coincidence, but you're about 5'9", weigh about 150. Ah, that couldn't possibly have been you, Vince.
Who are you talking for, yourself? I know I found that key and the button in the pocket of my brown suit. You're not kidding anybody. You want to know just as much as I do. Come on, let's get started for Clarksburg.
Lousy rain. Must be a cloudburst.
I can't see a thing. This windshield wiper's broken. Cliff, do you know where we are?
We've been lost for the past 5 minutes. I don't even remember how we got on this road.
Well, I'm going to roll down the window. Getting wet's better than crashing into something. Hey, Cliff.
Yeah?
Take the next road to the left. That'll get us to Clarksburg.
How do you know it'll get us to Clarksburg? I thought you said you'd never been out this way before.
Well, I don't know how I know. All of a sudden, everything looks familiar to me, as if I'd been over this same road before. I just know you've got to turn left at the next road. Stop here, Cliff! Stop here!
Hey, what's the big idea? You're trying to kill somebody, grabbing the brake that way?
That house, Cliff. There with the big porch. That's the house with the 8-room door.
How do you know that's the house? But you said you'd never been out here before.
I've never been here before in my life. Unless
it happened in your dream, is that it? Well, I think this is all crazy. We'll soon know for sure. Come on, we're going in and see whether there's an 8-doored room or not.
Funny, the front door wasn't locked, Cliff.
Never mind that. How do you know the 8-doored room is upstairs?
I just know, that's all. Cliff, I think it's this room right here. This is it. This is the place, all right. Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
8 doors. Where's that key?
It's right here in my pocket. You'll have to get it out. I can't. My hands are all wet. Perspiration.
Stop acting like a baby. You're sweating all over. There's the key. Now, which door?
That one, I think. There's nothing there.
Not now, there isn't. But there was something there.
What?
Look. There's blood on the wall.
Oh, Lord. Now, do you believe me? Now, do you understand that I wasn't joking when I told you about my dream?
Sure, I believe you. I believe you dreamed you killed somebody and stuffed them in the closet there. I believe you never saw this place before. That you intuitively knew which road to take and which house to come to. What do you take me for, a dope?
I wasn't lying to you, Cliff. Honest, I wasn't lying.
You came to me for help, didn't you? But you didn't have guts enough to come clean to say, Cliff, I went out to a place last night and killed a guy for such and such a reason. No, you cook up a dream trying to take advantage of me because I'm married to your sister.
No, Cliff.
Abusing my gullibility because I like you. Making a fool out of me.
Cliff, I wasn't lying to you. Everything happened just as I told you it did. How I happen to know this house was here, I don't remember. You've got to believe
me. Shut up. The dream's over now and baby's awake. You're going to start all over from scratch, you and me. I'm going to get the facts out of you.
Please, Cliff, let go of my shoulder. You're hurting me.
What were you doing here last night?
I never was here before. I never saw it until I came here with
don't
you.
Don't lie. Every time you lie, you're going to get something like this.
Please, Cliff, I'm half crazy already without you beating me
up. Who was the guy you did it to? What was his name?
I tell you, I don't know. I don't know.
Are you going to answer me, Vince?
I can't. You're asking me things I can't answer.
Who was the guy? Why did you kill him? I've handled close-mouthed guys before. You're going to tell me if I have to slap it out of you. Right in this spot where you killed somebody else.
Cliff, please. Please don't hit me again.
What was that?
It sounded like a door slam.
Then there's somebody else in this house. Which door did we come in?
I don't know. One of the eight?
All right, you guys, I've got you covered. Back up against that door there. One false move and I'll drop you.
Haven't you found what you're looking for yet?
Yeah, I guess I've seen enough. This stuff in your wallet identifies you. Cliff Dodge, Homicide Division. Why didn't you say you're a detective?
It's nobody's business.
Okay, okay. Wagner's my name. I'm the sheriff around here. When I see people monkeying around a house where a murder's just been committed...
Murder? You found the body?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, there were two murders. A man was killed and stuffed in that closet over there. We found the other body outside. A woman. Wasn't dead when she was found, but she was dying. Run over by a car. Deliberately. The car was run back and forth over her body. She said a few things before she died. Told us all about the other body in the closet. And gave us a pretty good description of the killer.
She said the same person murdered the man in the closet and deliberately ran over her body with a car?
No, but what else is there to conclude? Poor Mrs. Fleming. She owned this house, expected her husband home from South America tonight. She was a flirt, but even so, a very charming woman.
You don't happen to have a picture of this woman, this Mrs. Fleming, do you?
There's one in the next room. That door behind you.
Open the door, Vince.
I can't, Cliff. I can't.
Open the door.
Please, Cliff.
Open the door.
That's her, that big picture on the left. Pretty, wasn't she?
Cliff, that's her.
Well, now what's the matter with him?
He's fainted. Can't stand the sight of people who've been murdered, even if it's only a picture. Give me a hand with him, will you? Do you feel any better, kid?
Yeah, I feel all right. Cliff, that picture, it was the same woman. The woman from the dream.
Also, the woman who was run over and over with an automobile.
But I can't drive, Cliff. You know I can't drive.
Yeah, if it hadn't been for that, I'd have turned you over to Wagoner for murder.
Did the sheriff leave?
Yeah, he left. But I still don't believe that stuff about a dream. Are you sure you didn't leave something out? Some small detail?
No. I told you everything, Cliff. I was tired. I went to bed early. I fell asleep. That is right after Mr. Berg closed my door.
Berg? You didn't mention any Mr. Berg before.
Well, he moved into our rooming house about a month ago.
Why did he come into your room?
Well, the lights went on a blink. I remember he was carrying a candle.
How was Berg holding that candle?
Well, the flame was right in front of his eyes. I remember staring at it. I was very tired, Cliff. I don't remember everything.
And Berg, he said you're very tired, didn't he?
Yeah, now that you mention it, he did say that.
Good. Now, have you ever seen this picture?
No. No, but the man looks familiar. Say, that looks like Berg. I never saw him so well dressed, but that's Berg, all right.
I found this picture in this room.
Here? In this room? You found Berg's... What are you driving at?
Sense, reason, logic, sanity. The man you identify as Berg also happens to be Mr. Fleming, the husband of the woman who was killed last night.
Berg is Fleming and Fleming is Berg? Now, I'm really going out of my mind.
It's simple to a flatfoot.
I figure that Fleming pretended he went to South America. He took a room in your rooming house under the name of Berg. And tonight he's pretending to return from South America. At least Wagner said he's expected.
And last night Fleming came back here and murdered his wife? But who killed the other one? The man?
You did. But you didn't know you were doing it.
Oh, I did kill someone after all. I am a murderer. I still don't understand how it happened.
All right, kid, relax. Because we're going to find out tonight.
Find out?
Right. Now, if Fleming comes home, as his wife expected him to do, you're going to be waiting in this room for him. Waiting with a gun.
That won't do any good,
Cliff. It might after you've learned a few answers. Now, I'm going to tell you exactly what to say to Fleming, word for word. You might not understand, but you're going to memorize the things I tell you to say, word for word.
Memorize?
Yeah, because your life depends on it.
Cliff, you're not going to leave me here alone, are you, Cliff?
There'll be nothing I can do to help you, kid. If everything goes right, you'll come out of this scot-free. If anything goes wrong, that's the end. Now, Fleming will probably come up those stairs at the far end of the hall. He had better stand over here. The first thing to remember, let him speak first.
How did you get here?
You showed me the way, didn't you?
You remembered coming here? You're lying. Who brought you here? Who came with you?
Just this gun.
That's impossible. You had the look, the typical look. Why did you do everything you were told to do?
I wanted to see where it was all leading. I thought there might be some good in it for me later.
You purposely pretended? You mean you went ahead and consciously killed?
I figured you'd pay off heavy afterwards to keep me quiet. I found your wife and her lover just as you said I would. It was easy.
I should have known my control wasn't perfect when I saw my wife come running out of the house. She saw my car, came toward me. I waited, then gave it the gas.
I killed the man and you killed your wife. You wanted them both dead, didn't you?
Yes, but I didn't want to have to kill her myself. I loved her, but I hated her. She said I was too old for
her. That's what I wanted to hear.
What?
That's it, to hear you convict yourself.
What did you...
I was lying to you. Your control was perfect. You hypnotized me easily. I guess I've got a weak will or something.
Well, then what did you...
I was lying to you. I was hypnotized, all right. I happen to see your picture here in the house. I recognized you as Berg. And now I can't clear myself before the law ever. And you're going to pay for doing that to me now.
Now, wait a minute. Don't do that. Don't shoot. Now, look. Here, I have a watch. See it? Solid gold inset with diamonds and rubies. It's worth $20,000. It's yours if you'll let me go.
Stop dangling it that way. What are you trying to do?
Now, listen to me. Give me another minute. A minute by the watch.
Stay where you are. Now, don't move.
You don't want to shoot, do you, my friend? You wouldn't want to smash this beautiful, lustrous watch? A golden, shining little timepiece? You can't take your eyes from it, can you?
Please, don't. Take it away. Shining in my eyes.
But you love it. You're fascinated by it, aren't you? And now you're tired. You're very tired. And that gun is much too heavy for you to hold. Just drop the gun to the floor. And it won't be so heavy anymore.
Just drop the gun. Drop gun.
My control is perfect. Here, take this notebook and this pencil.
Take notebook, pencil.
Write as I dictate. I am wanted for the murder of two people at the Fleming house.
I wanted to murder two people at the Fleming house.
They are bound to get me, so I take this way out.
They are bound to get me, take way out.
Sign your name. There. Now give me the notebook and the pencil. Now pick up your gun again. Hurry. That's it. Now, put the barrel of the gun in your mouth. Put the barrel of the gun in your mouth! Good. Now, pull the trigger. Pull the trigger.
is he, Sheriff?
He's dead.
We just made it in time. I didn't think he'd try anything like that. Vince. Vince, come out of it, boy.
I'm all right. It's just that everything's hazy.
Fleming really threw a trance on you. You were just going to blow your own head off when I plugged Fleming. Had to. Only way I could break the spell in time to save you.
You shot Fleming? Cliff, did I do it all right? Did I do everything you told me to do all right?
Perfect. I had a hunch it was hypnosis the minute you told me about the candle. But how was I going to prove it? Only by having you come up against Fleming. That's why I left you here. Wagner and I were in the basement with a dictaphone. We put a microphone in the ventilator. I didn't want to make you nervous. That's why I didn't tell you about it.
Then I'm free? I won't be tried for murder?
Not around here, you won't. I'm sheriff here. This crime is solved.
Oh, thank heaven for that. I don't think I could go through a court trial. One nightmare in a lifetime is enough.
That, my friends, was Nightmare. Tonight's performance in a mystery playhouse. And now, for heaven's sake, let's get off that nightmare. Let's walk down to the green room, huh? For a gander at what sweetness and light is in store for you next time. Always sweet, always light. You know what? Our players are rehearsing there, so follow me, please. Come. Come, come.
Hard to convince Anne at first. Easy enough for me to say, we have to get rid of Ole. But Ole was Anna's brother. We talked it over on the cliff near the land. We have to, Anna. We have to go through with it.
Oh, Richard, there must be some other way.
The way things are now, everything's hopeless. You know that. With the paint formula cleared, we can be married.
Richard, I love you so much. I'd do anything for us. But this is...
Murder? Huh. You needn't look at it that way, darling. So far as you're concerned, Ole will just disappear.
But suppose something goes wrong. Suppose you're convicted.
Not a chance. You can't convict a man for murder until you find the body. And they'll never find Ole. We must, Anna. We must.
Very well, Richard. When... when will you...
The moment Ole finishes the formula. It's almost ready now. I'll have to do it that instant to make my alibi hold. Today, tomorrow, soon, anyhow. Everything else is ready.
I love you above everything else in the world, Richard. I love you enough for even...
Have a peanut, friend?
No.
Oh, snoozing, huh? Traveling on trains makes some people sleepy. Not me. Been on trains all my life. Never get sleepy. Going far?
Satan's Point, Maine.
Satan's Point? Never heard of it. Must be a devil of a small place. What I said. Satan's Point. Devil of a small place. Good, huh? Have a peanut? Devil of a place. Devil of a place.
Devil of a place it was that day. We went over every detail again and again until our story was perfect. A lot depended on the story we constructed. A lot depended on telling it well. I told it well. To the police in Maine and to the alienists in Boston. I started the story with the morning of October 11th in Ole's laboratory by the sea.
Hold on. This is my last mixture. It will be ready in a few minutes, and I want your eyes to be well rested.
Think you've got it this time, Ole?
No, there's no longer any doubt. When these pigments are mixed, I will paint a square board. It will look like a dirty green to my eyes.
And to mine?
To yours, and those of millions of others who are colorblind. Red. Red that you have only imagined till now. Red of the rose, red of a sunset. Red of fire, red of
blood.
I put the blindfold on. I could sense Ole's tenseness. He'd worked 15 years to make this moment arrive.
But just from all I can see, a miracle is about to take place. I confess to one great fear.
What's that, Ole?
I'm not afraid the formula is wrong. I'm afraid for you.
For me?
Yes. I have to warn you, Richard. I don't know. No one knows what mental reaction takes place when a person who's never seen color before suddenly does.
You mean that I could be affected?
You could be. You see, red excites even normal people. It vibrates in the brain. With you...
Let's have a look, Ole.
Now, Richard, when you take the blindfold off, look straight ahead of you. The board is right before your eyes. Look, Richard, when you do, start talking right away. I want your immediate reaction.
Okay, here goes.
Look. See, Richard. Look at red. Look. Say something. Talk, Richard, talk.
Say something I couldn't. It's hard enough to recall the little that I do. I was staring straight ahead of me at a square board. Nothing happened for a brief instant. And then I caught my breath sharply. My eyes dried. They burned. I closed them, but the patch of exquisite color seared my brain. A single hot, flashing stab of pain pierced my head. And then I felt a surging power, a physical power, grip me.
Talk.
And Ole's voice reached me, jabbed at me. My whole being seemed to focus on his voice. I had to choke it off. I distinctly recall reaching for him across something and finding his throat. And then... Then nothing more. Nothing but the breaking of glass and a sensation of violent action. Motion and action that lasted long after the voice stopped. Then I felt cold air lash around me. I was carrying something limp and heavy. There's a point of rock outside the house. It juts over the sea. I stood there for I don't know how long. The first clear thing I recall is identifying Anna's voice coming toward me.
Richard! Richard! Darling, what are you doing? Richard! Your hands!
Something died in me. I sagged to the ground, moaning.
Anna. Anna, I'm afraid. I'm afraid.
What do you suppose all this is, huh? Sounds like somebody got themselves murdered, doesn't it? Well, that was an appetizer for our next Mr. Yontree. And that old master chef. The laughing boy of the inner sanctum, Raymond, is going to serve it up to you. Yes. Raymond's going to be here next time in company with his fellow creeps in another attempt to scare the living daylights out of you. So why not humor the old creep and be around when we open the squeaking door? Innocent. This is Peter Lorre closing the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. Good night. Sleep tight. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Well, we've gone through our allotted time for this week. We'll be back next week with some more old-time radio, and I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan.